listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician.
Podcast.
Hey there, this is the 130th episode of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and today you're going to hear from Benji Rogers of Pledge Music. With the rise of crowdfunding websites like Kickstarter, Benji and his team over at Pledge Music set out to create a different experience for artists who are interested in crowdfunding a project. Their approach encourages artists to bring their fans on the creation journey. So instead of spending a month or so campaigning, trying to raise money to actually get the project started, the unique approach of Pledge Music aims to keep the artist making music while giving the artist's fans unique ways to support the project. If you've been on the fence about trying a crowdfunded project, I think you'll definitely want to take note of the different approach offered here by Pledge Music. With that said, let's get to my interview with Benji. Joining me on the line is Benji Rogers from Pledge Music. Hey, Benji, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a while since you and I have talked. I don't know if you remember, but we had a drink at South by Southwest like 3 years ago, and I don't think I've...
It was a while back.
Yeah, I don't think we've crossed
paths
since then. Yeah.
If I recall, it was at the bar at the Driscoll Hotel.
You are correct, sir. You are correct.
With the piano to my back.
Yes.
I like to keep a piano at my back at all times.
Yeah. So, well, it's great to have you on the podcast and hear about what you guys are doing at Pledge Music and first off, let's dive into a little bit of the history of Pledge Music. I know that when you guys came out, you were sort of lumped in with a lot of the sort of crowdfunding sites,
yeah.
But I know that your guys' goal is to be something more than that. So why don't you give us a little bit of the history of Pledge Music and maybe some of your background as well?
For sure. I mean, basically, the reason that first of all, I'm an artist, and I've released 5 albums, toured for maybe 9-10 years, and I basically the reason that Pledge was created, after having the idea on an air mattress in my mom's spare room, was because I looked on the internet for something like Pledge, and the only things that were out there that were even in the realm of what I wanted to do were crowdfunding companies. And I didn't really want to do crowdfunding. I wanted it to be more about the engaging of fans in the making of albums. And it's funny, we had the 6-year anniversary of registering www.pledgemusic.com this week. And what was so interesting about that was I went back and looked over a lot of the founding documents of the company. And what was consistent through all of them was that it wasn't so much about asking fans for money, soliciting donations. It really wasn't about that. What it was about saying that if we can unlock the process of the making of things for fans, and if we can bring them along on the journey as an album is being made, as a tour is being planned, as an EP is being recorded, if we can bring them along on that journey, then they will forever be bonded to the music that's created, and they will also continue that journey outside of Pledge into buying albums at shows, into coming to shows, and it was just about, I guess the basic principle was that there's 1,000 ways to buy. Mm-hmm. Fans are now getting assaulted with 1,000 ways to donate because of all the crowdfunding campaigns. But what they're not being given is really compelling reasons to participate in that artist's life. And so what I wanted Pledge to become, and what it's, what the amazing team we've got here built, is a destination for music fans where they can pledge to be a part of the making of albums, and the artist can share the making of the album with that fan. And it turns out that that's what super music fans really, really want. They want new music. They want access to things while they're happening. And I guess if I had to pull it back, an artist is much more interesting when they're making an album than when they're either funding an album or selling an album. Mm-hmm. So if we can, give fans more reasons to buy, they'll show up time after time. I should also add, by the way, that I've been a customer of you guys for a long, long time. So,
We appreciate that. We appreciate
that. No problem at all.
So with Pledge Music, when do you guys start engaging with artists? You know, I know with like, again, trying to draw some lines of distinction because you guys have sort of been sure. lumped in the fan funding type world. But
I give you specific on just that example. If I were to say what is crowd or fan funding, and by the way, I'm not a fan of crowdfunding at all. Or fan funding. It's just it's not what we do. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's not a very good music artist tool. It's not a good musician's tool. Crowdfunding in its simplicity says, give us X amount of money publicly, and once we get that X amount of money publicly, we will go and do something. It's a do this, then that happens. And if we don't get there, nothing happens. And what I found was it placed a false monetary value on the musician. So instead of it being an artist making an album, it was an artist raising $20,000. Or it was an artist failing to raise $20,000. Or it was an artist raising $1 million, and that was all that was talked about. It was money, money, money. Mm-hmm. And I felt that what that did was it kind of got away from the point of, you know, releasing albums in a cool way, which is that it's about music. It's about what the band's doing. So really, I think if you had to say what the difference is that crowdfunding is please give me money, then I will go do. Direct to consumer is here's something I've made, now buy it. And we sit in the middle with be a part of the making of the album. You can choose to pre-order or you can choose to do a targeted campaign, but that's not the focus. The focus really is the participation in the project as it moves along. And one of the things that I think is really interesting was artists kept saying, you know, these crowdfunding campaigns would end after 30 days. What happens on day 31? What happens on day 40? On day 90? So some of our campaigns might take 8 months, might take a year in order to kind of do what they're going to do. And I really believe that that's because that's how long it takes. So why cut it off after 30 days? Doesn't make any sense unless you are solely doing it to fund stuff. And that's really, really the key difference is that if you want to fund things and ask for donations, that's one way of going about it. But your time is limited. Your reach is limited simply because albums take longer than that. And how many emails can you send in 30 days? How many times can you hammer people up for another $5,000 here, another $3,000 there? And I wanted it to be less about funding and more about, you know, what a band's doing in the studio and all the chaos and craziness that ensues from there.
So when you guys work with an artist, you're more hands-on than just, say, someone putting something up on Kickstarter and just kind of letting it sit there. Am I correct in that statement?
Yeah. It's funny. Today, there's an artist who I met actually 2 years ago at Meetem, and he emailed me today, and he's like, hey, you know, what do you think of this? I think I'm doing everything right on the page, but doesn't seem to be, you know, doing what I think it can. And so right now I'm kind of analyzing it to look at it. And, that, you know, I don't analyze all of the projects, obviously, but the teams actually help craft and build these campaigns. One of the big reasons that we do that is because the knowledge in one of our team members' heads, whether it's, you know, Jack in London or Cecilia in London or whether it's Ariana in Boston or Nicole in New York here, is these guys and girls know how these things work really well. And so rather than making artists read through 500 blogs and, you know, like kind of just fumble through it, why not get the expertise of people who do this all day long? And, you know, since we're not really designed to be the size of a big crowdfunding company, we're designed more to be kind of like an artist tool and a marketing platform in a lot of ways. We're able to bring huge amounts of our best practices and just make it easier. Because it's quite daunting, you know, if you've never done it before. And I know because I've done it myself. I when we launched the platform, I was the first project, and it was pretty scary, you know. But now, you know, after you've done it, you know, 1,000 or so, you kind of get, you start to see the trends. And I tell you, it's the other thing I'll say is when it goes well, and when you work with an artist very closely, and as the teams do here, like when a campaign hits, when we're doing really well, we have high fives. Like if a campaign's taken us a lot of work, it's like it's super exciting. And you know, right now, you know, whether it's a brand new artist coming in, or a manager for ours coming in to meet with us, making a first EP, or whether it's, you know, Lindsey Stirling, who's number one on iTunes right now, you know, all artists have a similar thing, and that is that they are really interesting and exciting and cool to engage with when they're being artists. When they're being salesmen and women, it's a lot less interesting to the super fan, that is. So, you know, I think it's, we get our hands dirty.
So, a couple questions that off of what you said, but I guess kind of one is how, so, you know, because I did a project through a crowdfunding site as well, and I think kind of to kind of say validate your point, it turned into a 30 days of a anything but music, where I was the whole band, it was just became marketing campaign, and there wasn't really anything interesting happening that we were doing that artists or our fans could follow along with. But how do you set up the beginning or know that a band is in the right place in order to have a successful campaign? Or what are those like conversations like when you're talking to artists who are debating whether or not they're ready to do something like this?
Yeah, so basically if an artist, you know, emails us or submits to us, or if we meet with them, we basically go through a kind of a checklist of like sort of, okay, what do you want to achieve? This is what we think you can achieve, and this is how long we think it'll take, and this is what you'll need to offer to make that happen. And it breaks my heart when it becomes all about the marketing of it, because what it comes down to is there's a fundamental here. If you don't know how to play a bass, or if you don't know how to sing, or if you don't know how to play drums, and you watch someone do it, it's like amazing. And rather than focus on, hey, we've got to hit this funding target, we've got to do this, if the band lays back a little bit and says, we're going to do this over the next 2 months, you're going to get to see us do what we do, or the next 5 months, you're going to get to, you know, be a part of what we do. And then you're just sharing what you're doing. And that's incredibly exciting for people who don't know how to do it. And what I think it is it's looking at, you know, we can, you know, you can do a certain amount of ballpark math. You know, we obviously have a bit more of a sophisticated algorithm for how to do it. But you can say, if you want to do $50,000 worth of pre-sales, and if you've got 500 friends on Facebook and 200 friends on Twitter and 100 email addresses, that's going to be a challenge. So what we'll do is we'll say, listen, well, what do you actually want to do? Are you ready to do an album? You know, do you need $100,000 to record an album? No, you probably don't. Unless you want to use, you know, an amazing producer and, you know, go into, you know, Oceanway or something. But rarely what I find happens is artists get too hung up on the numbers. And what it really is about is, you know, the front row of your shows when you play, or the people that you know buy everything, the ones that email you asking you about the inspiration for the songs. These are the men and women who are going to come along for the journey if you offer them one. If you don't offer them a journey, if all you offer them is a way to buy in, or all you offer them is a way to kind of donate, that's all you're doing. And it actually cuts off that type of engagement that is possible. So we look at the artist, and we either meet with them or one of our team, you know, chats them over email or through the system itself. And what we do is we kind of construct the best practices. Artists will often write and build these incredible campaigns, and then we'll go in and we'll say, listen, your price point's too high here, or more often your price point's too low here, because it's going to cost you, you know, more than you're charging to ship this thing to Japan, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I've seen projects go up on other platforms that are like, you know, $10 and I'll send you a signed CD and bake you cookies. And it's like, but what happens if someone orders that in Indonesia? It's going to cost you $30 just to get it there. Lost money. Therefore, whatever target you were going for is irrelevant. Or that they'll order, or worth the order, like a signed ukulele to the Philippines. Then all of a sudden, you've got to buy a ukulele, you've got to ship it out there, and you've got to insure it, you've got to make sure it arrives on and on. So we try to take a lot of that heavy lifting out, just because we know what to look for when these projects come in. And we have basically like around an 80% success rate if it's just an artist that we've never met coming in on the platform, and a 90% success rate if we work that with our artist directly.
So when you're working with artists, is it something where you can only work with a limited number at any time, or how does that submission process work with you guys?
Yes. So basically, at the moment, you know, we can handle a huge number of artists, and we basically set the teams up around the world to be able to handle them on that time zone and give them, you know, as much attention as we possibly can. The other thing you find is that you know, if you've got, you know, 600 campaigns on the site, you know, live at any one moment, not everyone's doing everything at the same time. So occasionally you get some crazy moments where it's like, you know, wow, why is everything coming today on a Wednesday? Mm-hmm. You know. But ultimately, the system can be used completely on its own. Like, it doesn't need a team member to do it. You just get more out of it if you do use the team. And you know, and we're super interested to learn. Like, it's funny, this guy who's sending me this campaign, you know, it's done really well. It just hasn't done as well as, like, you can see that there's more potential to be reached. And so we sat down just now and had a meeting, like, okay, let's have a look at this. How many people are landing on the page? How many are doing it? Like, what can we give him back to get that feedback? And it's not one of our biggest campaigns. It's just a very cool one. And we're, like, trying to, you know, like, you know, and it's not, you know, most artists will need to think about this. Most artists, what they'll think about is, what can I achieve in the coolest possible way? You know, and I want to go make an album, and I want to be the best album. And also, another thing that we'll do is we'll often, you know, a lot of people have done crowdfunding campaigns. And one of the things that really I took to heart was when an artist said to us, he said, when I did a crowdfunding campaign, I thanked my fans. When I did a pledge campaign, the fans thanked us. And I think that really speaks to it, because the value that you get from watching a 9-month project unfold and an album being recorded is absolutely huge. And I think it's testament to the artists themselves that they can be really creative with our platform. So it's not just about the 30 days or the 60 days of the, you know, the targeted campaign. It's more about the 3-4 months of the updates as they roll out.
So what kind of campaigns are artists using you guys for? I know that because your platform is different, it allows for more flexibility for different things, as opposed to typically what you see on, like, a Kickstarter. It's like very album-based, usually, occasionally a tour, but usually album-based type of projects. Give us this amount of money and we'll go make a record. How are they using your platform?
Yeah, it's funny. Some have used it to make films. Some have used it to make, you know, like apps. We don't do anything that isn't music-based. We're solely music-focused. What that means is we've obviously got a whole database of music fans who are just with us to, you know, find and discover and be a part of great music. So that's been very, very cool. One of the things that we found is that we've had to adapt the platform for what artists want. So an artist was like, I need to do a 7-day campaign to offer some tickets to a show because people keep scalping my tickets. So we, you know, had it up in 7 days, and it ran for 7 days, and people bought tickets and went to the show, and it was awesome. You know, we had to build in things like guest list functionality so that you could print directly from the system. We had to build fulfillment in. So we basically built a music industry tool that was like, you know, artists started emailing us saying, hey, you know, is this eligible for SoundScan? So we had to make it SoundScan eligible. We had to go through all these processes because we knew what artists wanted. And I'm one of them, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm the artist. And I also, you know, my mom, my father, my stepfather were all managers. So, you know, there was no other way.
Yeah. I saw that Amanda Palmer, who became very well known for her Kickstarter campaign that raised like $1.2 million, is working with you guys now. What kind of project is she working on? How did that discussion go? And what was her reasoning for, after having such monumental success on Kickstarter, looking for something different?
Yeah, I wouldn't claim to speak for 100%, but I know that, so after the Kickstarter campaign that she ran went down, she and I met in Austin at South By on a panel together, and we had a chat afterwards. And basically, I was telling about what we did, and her business manager came down and met with me and the team. And I think it was more about just doing a very cool project that she wanted to do. She didn't want it to be a big, big splash like she had the last time. She just wanted to do something a little bit different, and she wanted to test us out, I believe, and see what we were doing and see how it worked. And it was a big success, and it was a very cool thing. And I have an Amanda Palmer poster in our office. So you know, she's also one of the smartest people I've met. And, you know, and likewise, you know, I know the team from Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and they're really smart, brilliant people. I think it's just about there are certain tools that you need for making music and giving music to people and, you know, keeping them, you know, updated as the campaigns go by. And there are certain tools that you'll need to just say, I need $5,000, give it to me, you know. I think artists have to ask themselves, do they want to solicit and ask for donations, or do they want to engage fans in an ongoing process? And, you know, it's really two different things. And I think that, you know, what Amanda did was she got the best out of what Kickstarter did. You know, the thing that I would have said, you know, what I would have done differently would have been that no one would have known how much money was raised. It would have really been about, you know, the album itself. And I know that that's something that, you know, that's where we differ from crowdfunding, is really that, you know, it's not about the money. And if it is about the money, then something's not right. And we spend a lot of time correcting, you know, journalists and whatnot. And, you know, I've been the artist making the EP, and, you know, you do need money. Let's not get around that. But the way in which you offer your fans an experience raises more money than if you just ask them for money. You know, we estimate that you get around 30% more income if you don't just flat out say, I need money, and show the financial amount and stuff. You know, so, and then close the campaign down early.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that's one big distinction between your site and other sites, is that projects don't have a giant, this is what we're shooting for, number. Yep. Sitting there, and then here's how much we've raised number, which is interesting, because now that we've had so many artists reach, you know, giant benchmarks with certain revenues generated by crowdfunding, to me it's almost, yep, like you go to those sites and you start looking at those as indicators of whether or not the artist is worth supporting or not, or as, yep, opposed to looking at the artists themselves.
I feel it's interesting. You're absolutely right. And when I was the artist myself, and when we did the first few campaigns, that was exactly why we changed that system, was because an artist walked into our office and she said, I don't want to do that. I don't want this to be about money. You know, well, why is that important? Well, what does money have to do with anything? You know, and also I was on the phone with a vinyl manufacturing company, actually. And the lady on the phone was telling me, she said, I was on a crowdfunding site and I was browsing by number. There's a 5,000, there's a 3,000, there's a 10,000, on. And she was like, and I realized I'm talking about bands. I'm talking about music. You know, like, and it was sort of, you know, like, and it's not that that's bad. It's not that it's wrong. It's just not, like, it's not musical. You know, if you look on those sites, there's no music player. You know, it's not about finding and discovering music. It's not about, you know, engagement. It's about fundraising. And it's not a bad thing. It's just different.
Yeah.
And the way I've always viewed it is that, like, you know, if you want to ask fans for money, put a PayPal button on your website and ask for donations. Just go for it, you know. But when you do that, notice that you're crossing the line. You're coming from a place of need. You're coming from a place of this. And, you know, some artists will use us as close to crowdfunding as they can. I think it's a mistake, because I think it's getting a fraction of what's possible. But I think that when we're really in our element is when, you know, the artist is in the studio and they're holding up their iPhone using our app to do updates and saying, hey, we're in the studio doing X, Y, and Z, check it out. And then, you know, we've also built some special syndication technology which allows fans to auto-share those updates with their friends. So, you know, we see about 17% of our inbound traffic coming from updates from pledgers, from artists.
Mm-hmm.
So if you cut that, the ability to buy in after 30 days or after 60 days, what are you leaving on the table? You know, literally fans can't get involved. So if your campaign ended, you know, 5 months ago and you still haven't put your record out, why aren't you taking orders for it?
Yeah.
You know, well, why would you just stop? It doesn't make any sense. Or worse, why would you start on another platform to take pre-orders for a record that you already sort of pre-ordered while you were fundraising? So I think it's just a different way of doing things. And I view this as a whole system. You invite your fans into the making of it. They pre-order, buy the album before it's made, and then as you're making it, you give them the rewards, if you will, which is, you know, the reward is they get to watch it.
Yeah.
And then when it's done, you get your stuff sent to you.
Yeah.
Win-win.
Are there any campaigns that you've seen lately that have been really intriguing to you, or that you think are definitely something other artists should take note of?
Absolutely. One of the ones that I'm most excited about right now is Lindsay Sterling. You know, she's a dubstep violinist, and she's she's doing a pre-sale right now. She just finished, and she's released it to pledges. She just really got into it from the word go. She's an amazing YouTube star. She's done lots and lots of stuff, but she was like just behind the process, and you could see. And you know, she's coming into the office to see us, and she's like, she's number one on iTunes right now, number two on Amazon, and that's a very, very cool thing. And she if you were to look at it in its bare essence, she just said, this is one of the coolest ways I can think of to engage my fans. And that's what she did. The other one I would say to look at is Rufus Wainwright, who's doing an opera, and it's going to be a big project, going into the BBC and doing it. Then you've got other artists who are like, doing a second project with us, doing a live album, or you've got, it's just that there's a fascinating thing to so many of the projects we work with. Dan Wilson is doing an incredible campaign where he's illuminating set lists for pledgers. We saw a phenomenal campaign from 311, who, literally brought their fans into the studio while the record was being made. We've seen artists singing gang vocals on albums, fans singing gang vocals on albums.
That would be remarkable.
It's very, very cool, yeah. And then we also saw, Lucinda Williams reissuing her first album on vinyl. So it's really it really does vary across the map. When ABBA are doing updates for their photo book, it's really kind of strange. And yet what I love is still, there's a new band out of New York called Leisure Cruise who are doing just a very cool deployment of their album. And it's just, it's better than, they're not just selling it. They're not just asking for money. They're in that middle ground. They're just involving fans in the process.
That's very cool. I know you spend a lot of time traveling and talking on panels and to artists, and I mean you're an artist yourself. What are some key pieces of advice that you could leave us with today with the artists who are out there, maybe have a project they're working on or just trying to make sense of the shift in the industry as it's happening?
Sure. I think that the most important thing I'd say to an artist is you're a creative. Most 90% of artists, I would say 90%, are very creative people. And when they go into the studio, when they go into a songwriting session, when they go into rehearsal, it's a creative process. And so when you go through the process of making an album, think to yourself, when you're done with the music making, apply some of that creative energy towards how that music is going to get to people. Because what tends to happen is, because this massive creative burst, you're having so much fun this year, you're enjoying it all, you're having this great time, and then at the end of it, you go, let's put it on CDs, and that's it, it's done. And what will happen is, they haven't thought about how the album is going to be received. And what was amazing was, this pledger that I spoke to, he said, I had the most incredible experience of buying a CD. And he basically said, I watched the album being made. I heard songs from the studio, demos, videos, photos, all this kind of stuff. And when the CD landed in my hand, my name was in the album credits. He's like, how do you get better than that? How does it go back? How do you go to just regularly buying a CD? And I think that ultimately what it is where artists just need to remember that what they do is fascinating to people who don't know how to do it. And if they don't share that process, then all they're going to be doing is showing up, holding a CD, saying, buy it. And if that were working, I don't think we would have a business. And I don't think a lot of, you know what I mean? I really don't. Because ultimately what it is pledgers buy 83% physical products.
Wow.
So every single project that we do pretty much has a CD or vinyl component or both. And so to not think about that, to just do digital releases only, is really selling short what's possible. And what I believe is that they'll sell more of their records if they just stop and think to themselves, what's a better way I can think of to get this music to people that goes beyond just here it is on a CD, here it is on vinyl, buy it now.
Yeah, I agree, especially here at CD Baby, we see a lot of artists marketing their music and a lot of them just sounding like salesmen as opposed to artists who engage in a creative process that, you know, most people in the world have no idea how it happens and are totally captivated by it, but yet we cut them out of that process and just turn into salesmen when the product's done. So
yeah, and here's the other thing. A bunch of artists are really not good salesmen. Like, I remember the first time,
indeed.
So I'll say this story, right? I got my first 1,000 CDs ever from disc makers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember ordering them, and when they showed up at my apartment, I suddenly had this moment of, like, I have to sell 1,000 CDs. How am I going to do that? Now, I hadn't thought about it first. All I thought was is I'd make the album, get it on CD, then worry about that later. And the difference is the process of getting the CD made was the point. That was the exciting part.
Yeah.
And then when people get this music, they've seen the context behind it. They've seen, wow, this is incredible. And what I really believe is, like, you know, getting your music onto digital, onto iTunes is essential. Getting your music into every place it can possibly be is essential. You do that all the time. That's foregone conclusion. But fans will buy this music before you've made it, and they will share it with their friends before it's been made. They'll share that process with you if you allow them to. And if the biggest artists in the world can do it and the smallest artists in the world can do it, it's not as hard work, as much hard work as it used to be. I know because I've done it every which way.
Well, that's a great thought to end on. If artists listening to the podcast want to find out more about what's going on at Pledge Music, and I know they can go to pledgemusic.com, but what are some other ways they can keep up with what you guys are doing?
Yeah, you can email us at info@pledgemusic.com. You can tweet us at Pledge Music. You can tweet me personally at Benji K. Rogers, BenjiKRogers. And I guarantee you someone will write back to you pretty much instantly because we don't sleep or get out much anymore.
Well, great. Well, thanks so much for being on the podcast. And I know that we've started working with Pledge Music on the disc maker side, and hopefully we'll be doing some more on the CD Baby side as well. So
we sure will.
Yeah. So
one last thing I'd like to say, too, is CD Baby was one of the inspirations behind Pledge. As I said, I've been a customer for a long, long time. And when I watched how well CD Baby operated, and then with disc makers as well, it was just game changing. So I wouldn't be here without that. So yeah.
Oh, we appreciate that, and I didn't make you say that in order to be on the podcast.
You did not at all. No, that was unprompted.
Well, thanks so much, Benji, and
thank you, Kevin.
We'll have to catch up again sometime soon.
Love to.
All right, thanks.
Take care. Bye.
That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you have a question or comment, feel free to email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. We'd love to hear from any artist that's used Pledge Music, thoughts, comments, or has done a crowdfunded project, some advice for artists who are considering something like that. We always love hearing feedback from artists, especially if you have a tip that you want to share with the artist community as a whole. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at K Bruner, the letter K, B-R-E-U-N-E-R, at K Bruner. And you can follow CD Baby on Twitter as well, at CD Baby. So I'm always willing to chat with you there. And we'll catch you next time. Take it easy.